Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today in New Orleans. All right, according to Pro Football Reference, Drew Brees trails only Peyton Manning in all-time fourth-quarter game-winning drives. Last night in New Orleans, Brees moved one step closer to catching Manning in game-winning drives and quite possibly overall respect as an NFL quarterback. Trailing by a point with 37 seconds to play and just one timeout, Brees zipped the Saints 35 yards downfield, setting up a game-winning field goal that broke the hearts of Houston and the minds of everyone watching at home. You can't leave Drew Brees a half a minute. As soon as Deshaun Watson completed his brilliant go-ahead drive, I immediately thought the Texans left Brees too much time. Life has a handful of fluctuating unwritten rules. Years ago in Kansas City, everyone knew, unless you enjoyed second place, don't chase the same woman as Tony Gonzalez.
Oh, wow.
Don't leave unfinished Chick-fil-A within arm's length of me.
That's true.
And you damn sure don't leave Drew Brees 30 seconds in a one-score game. It's not going to end well. Drew Brees has surpassed Dan Marino and John Elway as the most clutch quarterback in league history, at least in terms of perception. If Brees can win another Super Bowl, that reputation as clutch might eventually put him in the conversation as a better QB than Manning. Ooh. Right now, the quarterback Mount Rushmore is Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, and Peyton Manning. That's not my personal Mount Rushmore. Elway is on my Mount Rushmore. But if you would aggregate everyone's top four, I believe Brady, Montana, Unitas, and Manning would finish on top. Manning is number four and the most vulnerable. His postseason struggles put him behind the big three. His five MVP trophies place him well ahead of Brees, who has never been selected MVP. However, we live in the era when narrative trumps facts. You can build a narrative that argues Brees is better than Manning. Drew Brees is David in the Goliath of sport. The undersized quarterback who slayed the Giants of football for two decades is an amazing story. Brees is going to finish his career with more passing yards and touchdowns than Manning. Brees has a chance of catching Manning in total wins. What's going to take the Manning-Brees debate, make it fascinating, is when people ask, if you had to win one game, who would you rather have, Drew Brees or Peyton Manning? Brees' reputation is that he's clutch. Manning's reputation is that he's not. That seems strange given Manning leads the NFL in game-winning drives. Again, narrative trumps facts. Brees' narrative might someday surpass Peyton Manning's. All right, joining the desk now are Fox College football analyst Reggie Bush and the newest member to the NFL Hall of Fame, Tony Gonzalez. Welcome back to the show.
That's a beautiful thing.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
It's awesome. All right, we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. But, LeVar, I'm going to start with you. Could Drew Brees surpass Manning if he wins another Super Bowl?
Not if he wins another Super Bowl. I liked your Eminem approach, the 8 Mile approach, by putting out there, these are the reasons why we look at Peyton Manning as being the guy, the amount of MVPs. They matter. The statistical category and wins, they matter. But when you look at Drew Brees and what he's been able to do, people love Drew Brees. They love the story. He's undersized. He's been able to create a whole lot of success for himself. But I think he has to win. He has to win more Super Bowls than Peyton Manning, just based off of the amount of MVPs. You have to have clutch involved with you if you're going to get five MVPs. One is amazing.
Yeah.
Two is pretty interesting. Anything beyond that, that has GOAT written all on it. And I think Peyton Manning has been everything that goes into being the best in the game. I think he has to get three Super Bowls if he's going.
Three?
I think so.
Well, we would have had one last year.
That's fair. We don't know if he wins it, but that's fair.
Right.
But if he ties Peyton Manning,
Yeah.
I still don't think there's enough MVPs there for you to say he's more of a player than what Peyton Manning was.
But I think what Drew has done is he's already surpassed him as an all-time passing leader, right?
Yards.
In yards. He's thrown for 5,000 yards five different times. All the other quarterbacks have done that, they've only done it one time. Drew's the only one has done it multiple times. So I think if he gets another Super Bowl, which could possibly be this year, maybe next year, if he can get one more Super Bowl and you factor in that he's already passed Peyton on the all-time passing yards leader list, I think he can pass him. Because last night what we saw was typical Drew Brees doing business, doing surgery on defenses and coverages that he's done time after time. Now, he doesn't have as many fourth quarter comeback wins yet, but he will get there if he plays long enough. So I do think he can. I do think he can pass him.
He's the only quarterback I legitimately like. 37 seconds, I immediately said they're winning this game.
But you could say that for Peyton Manning if you put him in that same position, or a lot of quarterbacks. Indeed. You take Tom Brady. And that's what makes you in this conversation. Yeah. That's why we've been talking about it. But if I had to pick, because that's why we're sitting here, because in the hallway they asked me about this question, I'm like, I don't care, I'll take both of them. But if I had to pick, I'm still going to stick with Peyton just because of what he did for the position, how he revolutionized the position. When he come to the line of scrimmage, he was calling all that stuff, the Omaha this, and now a lot of quarterbacks do this type of thing when they get to the line. So he was kind of the front runner, the guy who changed the position, changed the way the quarterback position was played. But having said that, I will go back, and I've talked about this before. You always do this type of stuff. Hot dogs or hamburgers?
Uh-oh.
Ferrari
ketchup
or Lamborghini?
Or mustard.
Okay, Beyonce or Whitney Houston? It's like,
oh, come on.
Michael Jordan or LeBron. Which one do you want?
Right,
I'll take them both.
Right,
I'll take them all at the same time.
I'm going to say this, though, Tony, about, and I hate this because people for years think I beat up on Peyton Manning. I love Peyton Manning. I'm from Indianapolis. I saw what he did to the entire state in terms of football. However, again, when it comes to being clutch in the postseason, there are questions about Peyton Manning.
I can attest to one of those games we beat him in the Super Bowls. Yeah. One of those games where he did not come up with the clutch win.
There are questions about him, and I think that hovers over him a bit. And look, I get all the MVPs, and he certainly deserved them. And right now, Drew Brees isn't in that category. But when you just – people love stories. This little quarterback, man, dominating this league for 20 years, I just think people –
Can we enter the Jason Whitlock's People's Court?
Yes.
Can I introduce some new evidence to the courtroom,
ahead.
Please?
Oh, nice.
This is good because I know you're a fan of Drew. All right, I get this.
I'm a fan of Peyton, too.
I understand that. But that little statistic right there, Drew Brees in 2012 and 16, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of those five seasons, he missed the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Super Bowl. He missed the playoffs 4 out of 5 times. If we're going to introduce that evidence into Mr. Whitlock's official court of public opinion, if I look at Mr. Peyton Manning, how many times did he miss
those
playoffs?
Is that coming off the devastation of what happened? Didn't Sean Payton get suspended for a year?
Yeah.
That's coming off 5 years.
Okay.
Peyton Manning never went back-to-back seasons without going to the playoffs in a 17-year career.
Okay, but that last Super Bowl Peyton Manning got, the last Super Bowl, who won that game? Let's keep it real.
Who won that game?
He was on the team, but the defense won the game.
You can say that about Elijah, too, in New York, both times.
We do say that about.
But he got MVP both times.
Okay, you're right. But that defense is what kept them in there to get that Super Bowl.
All right, let me ask this question coming off what Drew Brees did last night. If you only had one game to play, not an entire season, one game to play, who would you want at quarterback, Drew Brees or Peyton
Manning? I'm taking the half man, half machine, man. I'm telling you, if you could hear probably what Peyton Manning's brain does when he's on the football field, it'd probably be like something like this. There's the robber over there. Safety's right there. All right, the linebacker's moving over there. The linebacker came up. All right, the defensive end went upfield. All right, there he is right there. Throw it right now. But done. I want the machine.
That seems to have problems in the biggest games, going all the way back to college. that's when the machine seems to
malfunction. When you have the camera on you as much as Peyton Manning has had it on you, you're going to see moments in time where he may not exactly be exactly what everybody exactly wants him to exactly be. And there's a guy by the name of Tom Brady that is the GOAT of GOATs as well. And you know what? You could say he's had the same situations take place in his career. He has lost in the big game. It's how you bounce back. It's what your body of work is. It's how you do what you do when you're doing what you're doing when you're doing it like when you're doing it on TV. Right. And Peyton Manning has always done that. He has always done
that. One game.
I got to go with Drew Brees because I know his DNA. I know his character. I've been in the huddles with him. I know how he commands respect on the field, not just from the offense, but also from that defense on the other side of the football field, much like we saw last night in the Monday Night Football game. Like you said, they left them too much time on the clock. And then what was the defensive coordinator doing, playing prevent defense?
We're going to get to that.
Man, they only need 7 yards. You in prevent defense, bro, they got one timeout.
And you're facing Drew Brees. One
and
game.
You're facing Drew Brees.
And you're facing Drew Brees. You know, one game in the Super Bowl or during the regular season? Because in the Super Bowl, I don't know. Peyton was an MVP of the Super Bowl before, but it's not even in that game, he didn't light it up, right?
No, he did not.
I don't know. That's a tough one.
Drew and Peyton went head-to-head, and Drew won.
Yeah, there was that one game.
In the Super Bowl.
In the Super Bowl.
And Drew got the MVP.
And Peyton threw a pick six, didn't he?
I think he got the MVP. Yeah.
I hate this question. They're so good.
You know what the right answer is, though. You do know what the right answer is.
Because I have to pick. It's like one of those things. I'd rather flip a coin, but I'm going to.
You ain't going wrong with either one of them.
You know the right answer.
You ain't going wrong with either one.
I don't know how to get that answer.
The right answer is Peyton Manning. Drew Brees is a great story, great player, Big Ten guy. I'm a fan of him. But we know outside.
I'm going to give you one last thing to think about, then we're going to go.
All right.
I'm going to give you this has always been my knock on Peyton Manning. And it's the same as LeBron James. Sometimes you have too much talent and you think you're smarter than the coaches. Mm. And if you look at Tom Brady and his partnership with Bill Belichick, you look at Drew Brees and his partnership with Sean Payton, it's a knock on Peyton Manning that he never had that partnership long-term with one coach.
Yeah.
He wanted control. Maybe he is smarter than the coaches. Mm-hmm. Maybe Tom Brady's smarter than Bill Belichick.
Drew Brees didn't have that.
Maybe Drew Brees, what?
Drew Brees didn't have that.
What do you mean? He's got Sean Payton.
He had to leave. He was somewhere else before.
That's because of his shoulder.
He had to leave.
Because of an injury.
He didn't build down San Diego.
Who bounced back better from the injury?
Come on. That's two different that's two different points in time.
Hey, guys. This is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save enough money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for the future or visit pacificlife.com.
Tony Gonzalez is back. Joining us now is Fox Sports NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. Time now for a big story. Let's return to New Orleans, where Deshaun Watson led an incredible touchdown drive that almost beat the Saints last night until Drew Brees and Will Lutz got the last word. Watson looked great at times, but was under serious pressure all night, getting sacked 6 times. He also had to overcome blunders by his head coach, Bill O'Brien, who inexplicably had the defense play off the line of scrimmage on the play that let the Saints get into field goal range to win it all. He also blew some timeouts at the end of the second quarter. Bill O'Brien, the question here is he the wrong coach for Deshaun Watson? I'm going to throw that grenade in your lap, LeVar.
And I'm going to catch it, and I'm going to take it so that y'all don't explode.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
All right.
He is the wrong guy, and I think he would be the right guy in a different situation. Offensive coordinator, maybe. But as the head coach, as the GM, acting GM, I think he is the wrong guy. And I'm going to take a different angle on you on this, all right? And I know we're looking at it from the offensive perspective, but you did – throw out there the defense being in a prevent defense.
Yeah.
If I recall sitting in that seat not too long ago, I said you're going to have more offense because you have less defense, right? In that game yesterday, you look at the stat line of J.J. Watt, one J.J. Watt, right? Do you know what his stat line was?
Donut.
Across the board.
Right.
Zero in every single category except being a great dude, right? Okay, then you look at the guy who replaced him, right? Angelo Blackson, the Auburn guy. A lot of potential, brings a lot to the table, right? Two tackles. You know how many sacks he had? Same as J.J. I can see you through my hand because that's the amount of sacks that he had, all right? Zero sacks. I said you get rid of a guy by the name of Jadeveon Clowney, you need to replace the production, all right? Now, you talk about the six sacks that they gave up, but we're not talking about the lack of sacks that they got.
They should have won the game if they walked their damn safeties up and played defense.
You need defense. You need defense.
And again, that's on Romeo Crennel. Right. You need a damn head coach that's in his DC's rear end at the end of the game.
That falls on him.
Yeah, well, that part is definitely him. I will say this. Offensively, he puts – I mean, they went to the playoffs, and get this, with Brian Hoyer, with, you know, Fitzpatrick, with Yates, with, you know, all playing a role, Whedon – and Brock Osweiler, okay? So there's nothing wrong with the scheming and the game planning. But here's the point. Deshaun oftentimes holds the ball too long. That's part of being a young quarterback. He has to understand he's got to get rid of the ball. But what you don't do is you don't go to New Orleans and run straight drop back stuff. You have got to protect your quarterback. And that's the biggest issue I have with the way they run their offense. When we were going to Kansas City back in our day, we had Gary Zimmerman. Hall of Famer, all decade of the 80s and the 90s. We go to Kansas City, and that place is a disaster to play in because of the noise in Kansas City. We took out every seven-step drop and every five-step drop that had a hitch in our offense. Gone. We won't run them this week. And yet you go into New Orleans, which is an absolute nightmare for an offensive lineman. You got a guy that you just got 5 days ago in Laramie Tunsil and say, here you go, one-on-one, no chip help, no tight end lined up over there. Good luck to you. We're all counting on you. We hope it works out. That's just bad coaching. I don't care who you are. That's bad. And that's what's got to change.
Yeah. I mean, when I played there, and when I played for the Falcons, you're going there twice a year, first game of the season, coming off of what happened last year. You saw the signs up there. We're not over it. You knew they were going to come out hype, and that's what happened. I think that throws, you talked about the six sacks. That definitely, you got to put the crowd probably got two, three of those, because it helps give an advantage. But is he the head coach for Deshaun? I say, yeah. And I like it. He's done it before with lesser talent. Deshaun is the type of person anyway that it can transcend coaching. He's a talent to me. I like him. I like him a lot. I think he's going to be successful for a long time as long as he can be careful of what his ability can bring him, which you can scramble and all that stuff, but if you take off running, you're going to get tattooed, you're going to get hurt, and I don't know how long you're going to last. But I like him going forward. They played a lot better than I thought they were going to play in that dome.
Nothing about that game last night, seeing him leap into the end zone early in the game and injure his back to some degree, and then taking the six sacks, nothing about that was like, damn, this looks like the Black Andrew Luck syndrome going on in here in Houston.
How do you tell him not to do that, though, when you have that ability? And that's a good thing. Like, Lamar Jackson this weekend obviously had an unbelievable game. Three carries for 6 yards. That's the stat I loved most about that game, is that he's not taking off and designing runs for him. Can they do that with Deshaun? But won't that change who he is as a player?
Six is a high. That's a league high in sacks for the week. Six. He was sacked the most out of any quarterback. So you got to assume he's running out of necessity. That's based upon scheme. So naturally speaking, yes, he can run. So if he needs to run, he's going to run. I mean, but that doesn't make it right. It doesn't make that the right situation for him to be in. We don't know if that's helping him to grow to be a better quarterback.
Here's what I would say is that from a schematic standpoint, and you're talking about routes and route combinations and his ability to throw them, incredible. What they did in that drive in two plays, incredible, right? They did great stuff there. But you have to marry that with protections, and how are we going to protect our quarterback and eliminate some of the contact that he is getting? That's where they're failing, because, you know, I go to the second Monday night game after that Monday night, right? The second Monday night game, they come out, the Raiders do, in 10 plays, run the ball three-step drop, five-step drop, screen to my tight end, hit you in the chin, boom, trenches. Your quarterback didn't get a sniff. He didn't get it all night. They didn't sniff your quarterback with Von Miller on one side and Bradley Chubb on the other side. And that's game planning. Mm-hmm. And that's where – so the development of routes and route combinations and what he's teaching that quarterback are exceptional because that quarterback is – he was great coming in, and he has grown by leaps and bounds. But what they're not doing is understanding, listen, we have got to do a better job when it comes to how we devise protections and how we're being attacked from a protection
Very
standpoint.
Quickly, set me straight on this. You played for Mike Shanahan, an offensive-minded coach. At the end of the game, in those final 30 seconds, shouldn't he be managing his defensive coordinator, or do you just leave him alone?
Absolutely. This is what I want. Mike Shanahan be like, this is what I want. This is what I want. And, you know, with 6 seconds left, you think about this. You got a couple deep safeties, right? Walk up in press, jam up at the line of scrimmage. Even if you give up a completion, guess what? You don't even get the timeout. There's not enough time. So to sit back 9 yards is...
Flip side.
They might get behind
What about the coordinator on the for the Saints? I
mean, they got behind him.
He got behind him. That situation.
They did get behind him.
Tony Gonzalez and Mark Slareth are back. Let's move to Oakland, where the Raiders bounced back from a tumultuous month of dealing with Antonio Brown nightmare and actually got the win last night over Denver. Derek Carr had a solid night and got plenty of his receivers who are still there with Tyrell Williams and tight end Darren Waller both having big nights. After the game, Carr didn't shy away from the Antonio Brown fiasco.
Let's get the elephant out of the room. Antonio is no longer with us, and we love Antonio. We wish him the best. But we knew with the guys we had in our locker room, we already had a good football team. And if he wanted to be a part of it, awesome. If he didn't, awesome. You know, we're going to come out here and we still have to play a game, you know. And again, we wish him the best. I hope he goes off and has a great year.
Well, as much as people talk about it, I mean, my God. I mean, I feel like someone's smashing my temple on the side of the head. Get over it, man. It's over. You know, we were good the preseason without him. You know, we're going to be fine without him. And we wish him the best. But, you know, we gave it a shot. And now New England gets their turn. Good luck to them. But I just can't, I can't deal with it anymore, really. Sorry.
I've been critical of John Gruden and the Raiders all offseason. They showed up big last night. They took the momentum from this bad situation with AB and used it to annihilate the Denver Broncos. Derek Carr played a phenomenal game. I think the AB saga actually helped the Raiders last night.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. I think when you look at what took place last night and what took place overall, if you look at the overall landscape of this whole entire deal and how it unrolled, it was overstated, the relevance of AB in the total situation. It was understated, the amount of talent that they had and the potential that they had going into the season. It was never talked about. Everything was AB this, AB that, AB Central, right? I thought it was interesting. Leading up to the game, right, one of the most OG-est of OG moves ever took place. They made that man apologize. He apologized to the team. Then he apologized on camera in a presser. Then they let him go, not even 24 hours after that man came out and apologized. And they said, you're going to play for us, right? He's gone. They come out. They come out and on Monday Night Football, you're hitting into a Monday night game and you beat the brakes off of the Denver Broncos. They knew what they had. If they weren't as good as they knew they were, you might have saw AB playing that game. They would have tried it. They would have wanted to see what they could have done, what they could have got accomplished if they weren't as good as they knew they were. I think they knew all along, and AB was a casualty of his own self-righteous approach to the situation.
Well, I will tell you this. I think they used that, and I'll agree with Jason. I think they used that as a motivational factor, and I'm with you. I think they're far more talented. I mean, you compare them to last year, and I called one of their games last year where from a talent level, they just weren't talented enough to compete. They're far more talented on both sides of the ball, and they went out there, one, used that as motivation. Two, they went out there and absolutely thunder punched the Broncos right in the teeth. I mean, that was a physical whooping with two backup offensive guards. I mean, that's the way they did that. And then defensively, you think, well, that's the one place. I'm telling you something about Vontaze Burfict, man.
Yeah,
you could talk about the intelligence of Vontaze Burfict. You can talk about his, you know, propensity to get himself fine. That dude's forehead is made of concrete.
He plays hard.
And he puts it on people,
yes,
man.
I am a
huge fan of the way he plays the game.
He also is probably their smartest defensive player to if you talk to Marvin Lewis.
And you see where he's at in his career, too. He was getting people out of the scrum. He's like being a leader now. It's like, look at this guy. He's looking good. But, yeah, I'm agree with you. I think for sure they use that as motivation. How could you not? I mean, the noise was so tremendous around it. And I believe Coach Gruden, after the game, he really never even meshed with this team. He never really played with this team. How many practices did he do all in his time there? How many practices did he really get?
A handful, right?
A handful. Literally five out of 34. I don't even know what it is. Mm. So it's not like even they knew what they didn't have or knew what they had with him. And so when they were happy to get him out of there, and they had to come out and play like this. They looked well coached. It wasn't your typical Raider team getting all the penalties. They looked awesome last night.
I think LeVar, how could they not use this as motivation? AB showed up in Oakland and treated the entire roster, not just Gruden and Mayock, but the entire roster, like, y'all clowns, and I'm better than all of you all, and I can do whatever the hell I want. You had captains stand up and support him when he did issue that apology, mm-hmm. and then he turned around and did the nonsense that he did, and people are sitting around speculating. And again, if I'm Derek Carr, people are sitting around, oh, he figured out Derek Carr is no good and really didn't want to play there and tried to finagle his way to New England to play with Tom Brady. If I'm Derek Carr, if I'm John Gruden, if I'm anybody on that roster, I'm offended. I really am. Like, dude, you know, we tried to welcome you in and you acting like you better than us. And so I do think without question they went in with a sharper focus and determined to, like, oh, we're going to put a little show on in the nightcap of the opening weekend of football in the NFL. AB can see what he's missing.
Here's a quick question for you guys who did very well in the league. Was there ever a player that made you feel as though you were better than what you were or not as good? Did you need somebody to validate how good you were as a player?
From a teammate perspective?
From a teammate perspective, period. Did you undervalue or overvalue based off of somebody else in the locker room?
Well, you have to understand, I played offensive line, so I was always paranoid about everything, and there's no good thing that can happen to you when you play offensive line. I mean, nothing. Like, right, you go out and you can whip somebody's butt for 65 plays in a row, you give up one sack, and you suck.
I come from a perspective, that's your mindset. This dude played with John Elway. If you don't think playing with John Elway didn't give him a level of confidence,
it's still based off of a mindset.
Sure.
You have a job to do, and nothing is going to dictate to you what your mindset is going into that moment where you have to make those blocks, where you have to make those catches and run those routes, right?
But the point for me, though, was because I was that teammate. I was that guy that would sacrifice. I was that guy that would have an arthroscopic knee surgery on Monday and play on Sunday because you were that important to me because I wanted to do it for you. And that's Jason's point, is this guy is basically saying, you guys can't do nothing for me because I'm above every one of you. And that, me personally, I would be so irritated. I might play the high road, but behind closed doors, I would loathe that type of activity.
And then LeVar, and I've heard Mark make this point. I'm going to steal one of your points, Mark. There's 15 jack-offs on every team that, you know, their level of concentration goes up and down. AB elevated those 15 guys, in my opinion, and helped them conform to the rest of the group that was like, because if that had gone poorly for the Raiders last night, they would be the laughing stocks of the NFL
But that's the point that I'm making. The point is that AB did not dictate how good those guys were. AB did not dictate the worth of what Carr was going to be in that game.
The point we're making is he did dictate their focus last night. And again,
I think it's overstated. I think that's overstated because you're a professional. You have a job to do. Did it play a part? Oh, we have
LeVar,
to deal
you're thinking
with
about
here.
Yourself.
Well, I don't know. I think if you're thinking of it from the standpoint of
what about Dale Carter? What about, some of the guys, Tamarick Vanover, some of the, you know, I'm thinking of guys that
whose effort fluctuated.
Well,
you can see we had Larry Johnson.
Yeah.
Used to get dropped off in a Rolls Royce to practice and after he got his money. And then, I don't want to work as hard as I used to. Your focus is in different play. You want to be the fashion guy.
Yeah.
Come in. Hey, you see distractions like that come on, but, you know, and half the team that's going to affect and half the team it's not going to affect. So, if I was a Raider last night, I would have came out full force just like they did. I'd like to see if it's sustainable, though. Let's see how good they really are.
Sure.
They're riding emotion.
You can't play 16 weeks on emotion, you know? You can't.
All right.
You got to have substance.
I want to get to what I've been wanting to do all day. We want to say a big congratulations to our guy, Tony Gonzalez.
Oh,
inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame last month.
Thank you.
It's a well-deserved honor for one of the NFL's all-time greats. Tony, we're proud to call you a friend of the show. I'm proud to say I was there at the beginning. I got a little fun pack of Speak for Yourself T-shirts for you.
All right.
And because I didn't make it to Canton, I've gone overboard on your Hall of Fame gifts.
Oh.
I got something for everybody. My friends over at Wally's hooked me up. This is a bottle of tequila for you and your boys, Casa Degonis.
Right, this is the best.
That's the best of the best. This is a bottle of wine, I believe. Nope, this is a bottle of scotch for you and Uncle Dennis.
Yes.
That is some tremendous scotch there. A bottle of champagne for you and your mom.
Yeah.
And then finally for your wife, I'm hoping this is the best bottle of wine you will have ever had in your life. Wally's tells me it doesn't get any better than that.
Oh.
And so, Tony, when Tony invited me to his Hall of Fame ceremony, I couldn't make it. I was devastated. But then I watched your speech. Your speech was incredible. You made me so proud. It was so well put together. And then at the bottom of the screen, my name scrolled across as one of the people you thanked. And, dude, I cried.
That's awesome.
The Hall of Fame is very important to me. That's as close as I'm ever going to get to say that I played any role in somebody getting into the Hall of Fame. Awesome, man.
Yeah. Well, that's I appreciate it, man.
Awesome.
I appreciate it. And I know you guys, I don't know if you guys know the story. The reason I did thank him, because sometimes you need people to tell you the truth. And a lot of people talk about Jason, you know, he's here, he's there. But I believe he's always going to tell the truth from what's in his heart.
Indeed.
And after my second year, I did not play well. And he called me out. And honestly, that was a big part of my motivation to turn things around. So that's why I thanked you.
Wow.
And I appreciate these gifts. Hopefully this bottle of wine is the best one, because maybe I can get lucky after I drink.
No, that's right.
So I appreciate it.
Hey, listen, I went to the Alaska Hall of Fame. Can I just have some tissue? Can you just give me some tissue?
Was I on the bottom scrolling across? LeVar Arrington played a part in Mark's Flareth.
Whitlock and LeVar Arrington, Reggie Bush is back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell.
Yes, sir.
Take it away.
Let's talk about Reggie's alma mater, USC.
Reggie.
Where athletic director Lynn Swan resigned yesterday after 3 years on the job. Swan's retirement already has sparked questions about head football coach Clay Helton, with some people speculating that Helton's days at USC could be numbered. I want to start off with you, Reggie, ask you straight up. Do you think Clay Helton will be next to go?
Well, I don't think he'll be next to go, because what I saw this last game from USC was maybe one of the most impressive wins that I have seen in a while at this school. JT Daniels gets hurt in week one, right? And everybody knows how important that quarterback position is. The next guy who stepped in, Keaton Slovis, looked great. Not good, he looked great, and he was dropping dimes all over the field. He had one point in the game where he had 11 completions in a row, right? So the offense didn't miss a beat. They beat the brakes off of Stanford, which is a ranked team and a really good opponent.
Right.
And they got the win, most importantly, right? After a week where they lost their starter, lost their number one quarterback. So to me, Clay Helton did an amazing job at bouncing back, when a lot of times we've seen that go the other direction.
Yeah, but that can change very quickly as the weeks go by, especially at USC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people turn on it. They'll turn on Reggie Bush.
Yep.
They'll turn on Clay.
All right. 100%.
Now, here's the reality of that. The schedule doesn't get any easier moving forward.
Yep.
And depending on what he's able to do in those games that really, really, really matter, like Stanford, that's a big win.
It matters.
That's a big win. That's a big win. But let's see, as they get a little bit deeper into this season, If he's able to have success, he'll be fine.
Well, they got a walkover against UCLA, one of their rivals, because UCLA's terrible.
Yep.
Notre Dame's going to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. The problem, I think, for Clay Helton is, and Clay, everybody knows this, a new athletic director wants to hire his own people.
Yeah.
What just got Lynn Swann run out? New school president mm-hmm. wants to put her own team together, so Lynn Swann's got to go. It's unfortunate timing to me for USC because you're right, Reggie. This is a very talented freshman quarterback who Clay Helton has unveiled, and they finally, to me, have the right coordinators perhaps in place for Clay Helton and USC. So things are right at the brink. We're like, damn, this may turn a corner and go well. But Clay's going to be working for a new athletic director at some point over the next 3 or 4 months. And that, generally speaking, that new athletic, what else is there to do but hire a head football
and at the,
coach?
And at the end of the day, it's about production. And it's about winning games,
there
right? As long as Clay keeps winning
they can't
and he keeps giving production, they can't touch him. It's that simple.
That's true.
All right, next.
Yes, sir. So sticking with college football, let's move to LSU, who got a huge win over Texas on Saturday. Despite getting the win, Tigers coach, head coach Ed Orgeron said yesterday that there was no AC in the visitors' locker room. It was 98 degrees at game time, and there was a lot of cramping going on during the game.
Yep.
But Texas actually denied that the visitors' AC was broken. Want to ask you guys, either way, do you guys think that this is a valid complaint?
No. No.
This not is valid?
Reggie,
have you ever been in them locker rooms?
We played in a Mid-American Conference.
Yes.
I don't remember no air-conditioned locker room.
That's true.
I mean, what the hell we complaining about?
What
there ain't no
mean?
Air conditioning in the locker room. That's a complaint.
It's 100 degrees.
Y'all score,
outside,
Reggie.
Which means it's probably like 120 in that locker room. Have you ever been in a yoga?
I have.
It's hot as hell in there.
Hot yoga.
It's hot.
It's football.
I know it's football, but bro, I can't say this though. That's not the worst I've ever seen. Cause I've been in games post game where it's like freezing cold outside and that hot water ain't working.
Yes,
tell me that ain't happened to you. Tell me that ain't happened to you before.
Yes, bro. Yes, freezing rain. And
freezing,
you be like,
taking the coldest shower in the world.
Why is the water getting cold? Why is the water warming up?
Yeah, they didn't cut that.
Why that you don't get hot water? Yeah. You do not get hot water, and I think that that's
probably
worse.
Is this a legitimate complaint? No air conditioning?
I think it's a legitimate complaint, but I also look at it as it's a legitimate competitive edge as well.
I mean, listen,
if you could get away with them being a little warm where they start cramping up a little earlier, that could be the difference in
and
the game.
And they did start cramping up in the game,
there you go.
Too, so.
I can't believe you can do it after you win the game. Maybe he wouldn't have said anything had they lost because it would have sounded like whining. But
of course.
I heard that. I was like, air conditioning in the locker room?
Well, I played at Iowa.
We had fans at Ball State. Big old fans just blowing up.
I played at Iowa. They painted the locker room pink. You went up in there like rubbing your arms and stuff like, are we playing a game or are we waiting for them to bring a baby out? Like, what are we doing?
True. Reggie Bush and Mark Slareth are back. Let's move to New England, where the Patriots' decision to sign Antonio Brown hasn't exactly endeared them to the football-loving world. But while a lot of the hate over the move is pure jealousy, one coaching legend, Tony Dungy, took issue with it for a different reason, saying the move sends the wrong message to kids. Bill Belichick addressed Dungy's comments in typical Belichick style.
I don't know if you're aware of it, but you really upset a lot of the people in the football world. They say that they're disappointed. I know Dungy was one guy who said he's disappointed in Kraft, but they're disappointed that you gave this guy an opportunity after he kind of walked out or talked his way out of Oakland.
I'm sure that Tony Dungy or whoever else it was, I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion. That's what this country's built on.
All right, I want to read him. Tony Dungy's comments in context. I coached 13 years, and every year my first message to the team was, we want to win the Super Bowl. Yes, we want to be talented, but we have to be role models. These kids in our country look up to NFL players and coaches, and I really think that this sent the wrong message. I agree with Tony Dungy. He's articulated why some of us respect the hell out of Bill Belichick, Bob Kraft, and Tom Brady. Respect the hell out of them. I mean, the Mount Rushmore of football. But we do think they'll cut any corner capable to win a championship.
Yes.
And it kind of undermines your respect for them. I agree wholeheartedly with Tony Dungy.
I'm not going all the way go there with that. And sometimes you got to see the end result before you can understand the reasoning behind the decision. And if this were the first time that the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick have made a decision to go after a guy that had a checkered pass.
Aaron Hernandez.
Worked
out well.
Here's the reality of it. The reality of it is that when you look at people that could be a disruptive force, but you can give them the opportunity to rehabilitate, to have redemption.
Oh, AB's there to rehabilitate?
It's possible. It's possible
AB's that AB's there to rehabilitate.
That's possible that that
that's
could
what
be
Bill Belichick
there. It's possible that that could be their approach.
We're going to rehabilitate Antonio Brown.
And here's the reality of it.
With Bill Belichick
name one player who has torn apart the fabric and the makeup
that's not
of this.
That's not the argument.
Well, the reality of it is that if
you're a high school football coach, kids are looking at AB act this kind of a fool and this kind of a clown, and the best team in football, that the team that doesn't need him signs it.
I think if you see Antonio Brown that shows a remorse for what took place in
Oakland. Oh, he showed remorse.
I think if
they're
going to
rehabilitate
itself,
him after he shows remorse.
I think if it presents itself
go.
That way.
All right. Flares go.
I will tell you this. I hate everything about what Antonio Brown has done. I hate it to my core. And I understand the whole role model aspect of this, and I get that. I know this about Tony Dungy, man. He is about grace. Mm-hmm. He's about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. He's about kindness. Yep. He's about love. And Tony, he would give guys, and I'm sure he's given guys opportunities. Here's the issue. Antonio Brown has been enabled throughout the entirety of his career to act like an ass. Mm-hmm. And he's taken advantage of that opportunity. Mm-hmm. He will not be given this opportunity here. I've heard this said many, many times, and I disagree with this statement. NFL people talk about the best ability is availability. The best ability is a responsibility. Like, we live in a country where everybody knows their rights. Not enough people understand their responsibilities.
Yeah.
And he's going to be given an opportunity to be a responsible football player. And here's what I love about the situation.
Oakland didn't give him that opportunity.
Pittsburgh didn't hold him to a standard. He just wanted to leave Oakland. Yeah. Okay. He wasn't even in Oakland, right?
Now you're getting on the road. Here we go.
Here's my point is this. You're going to go to an organization that will hold you accountable, make you responsible. If you're not, you're not going to get to play for Bill Belichick.
Yep, that's correct.
So the point being is this can be a redemption story. I don't know that it will. I probably doubt that it will. But it has that opportunity.
They're going to hold Antonio Brown to the same level of responsibility they did Aaron Hernandez.
Well, to me, this is who the Patriots are. Because time after time, they have proven that they don't care what a guy's past is, that they will pick him up and make him conform to the Patriot way, right? Robert Kraft has some issues this offseason, too. So we can't just sit here and point the fingers at the players when the owner is also part of some of the issues that are going on as well.
I go ahead, but let's stop with that one. Continue. I just think that that's a whole different ball of wax, but continue.
Okay, but it's a trickle-down effect is what I'm trying to get to.
No.
Right? It's the trickle-down effect of this is what I'm saying is that this is who the Patriots are. So if you're looking for an apology from Bill Belichick or anybody else in the organization, you're not going to get it.
Right.
Because they don't care, and you just said it. They will go to ends meet to whatever they got to do to win another championship, to win another Super Bowl.
Mike Vick is one of my guys. I
love
Mike
Vick.
I got a ton of respect for Mike Vick.
Love what Andy Reid did for him.
When Mike, and there was another advocate there that was very
Tony
outspoken.
Dungy. Love what Tony Dungy did for him.
What separates the two? Why say one thing about one situation?
For what he did off the field. A huge price for what he did. And Mike Vick to me, more remorseful, he paid, AB has paid no price, a little financial price.
He lost a lot of money. And how do we not know that, internally speaking, how do we know that AB isn't paying the price? How do we not know that AB isn't going through something? How do we not know
he's going through something.
I just believe sometimes when we decide to pick and choose where we want to lob our grace, where we want to lob our opportunities to redeem yourself,
exactly
I think that's dangerous.
Let
me
clarify my position. I got no problem with AB being in the NFL. None. The Patriots, the one team that didn't need him, they just put their stamp of approval to some degree on AB. They didn't need, if he had signed with Jacksonville, I'm a hypocrite. I'm a Chiefs fan. I'd be talking probably a little bit differently if he had signed with the Chiefs, but probably not, because I've been critical of the Chiefs for the Tyreek Hill situation, for Kareem Hunt, for Frank Gore. No, so I probably would. Okay. But it's the damn Patriots, an embarrassment of riches, and they have to run and
but
give this dude $9
like,
million?
That still sounds like malice. That doesn't sound like being objective about it.
To me,
again, you mentioned Aaron Hernandez, right? Like, yeah. that's really off the field stuff. That's not even to me.
AB has off the field issues.
Not like that.
Okay, when I throw an owner in there, why is that different? Because we've seen owners also have off the field issues to the point to where they've had to sell the team. So why is that any different? I'm not saying this either way sends a good message because it's the owner or player. Either way, it's probably a bad message.
There are plenty of players in this league who have domestic violence issues,
yeah,
who have child abuse issues, mm-hmm, who have all these other things that have been given extra opportunities, yeah, to be in this league. This guy has a social media issue.
Other issues as well.
Right.
Yes.
But he hasn't gone down the criminal act. And you know what? No, if they've got a chance to give him an opportunity,
exactly,
and they're going to hold him accountable. That's the biggest thing. He hasn't been held accountable. They will.
I'm going to admit something.
Okay.
I can't stand AB. And so I'm not objective here.
No,
because again, I'm the same guy that they when the Cowboys signed Greg Hardy, I defended it. Paid it debt, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right. I'm the number one guy. Michael Vick loved what Andy Reid and Tony Dungy and them did for him. Loved it. AB, man, he's disrespecting the game in a way that I don't think these other guys have. That's what bothers me.
But does he deserve less of an opportunity to move forward than those guys you just named?
And again, he's disrespecting the game. I don't think this guy has respect for the game of football, and it bothers me that the best team, the blue chip of all blue chip stocks, because I really believe that about Bob Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady and what they've established, that is the best of the NFL.
But they've established that's what they do. They've done that. They have
that's
a track record
they,
of doing
their
it.
Track record. That's what they do.
They have a track record of doing
again,
it. This isn't the
those,
first time.
Again, when I, to some degree, I'm being sarcastic isn't the right word, but when I guys that have their off the field issues, pay their debts to society, I'm all for ex-cons, whatever, they need to be re-entered into society. What I can't take for me, just personally, and I kind of assume Mark would be here with me,
you
but
you don't
he's
think
not,
he suffered enough.
No, it's not that
you want,
has,
you want him to suffer
he's
some more.
He's disrespecting the game.
You want him to suffer.
He doesn't care about
what
the
you
game.
Want, what
okay,
you want to happen
is,
to
okay,
him before
but look
he can
at it
come
like
back.
This, though. Look at it like this, though, because AB is going to spend half the season just trying to learn the playbook, okay? Let's be honest about it. He has a ton of work ahead of him. So to think that he can just plug and play and line up and say, Brady's my QB, so now I'm going to go ball? Nah, bro, it's guys in this league that eat, sleep, and breathe football to the point to where they will knock your head off if you are out there second-guessing, if somebody has to tell you where to get lined up, or if you just don't know your offensive system. He will get exposed one way or another if he's not on top of his game, period. So we don't even have to worry about whether he suffered enough or not. It's going to happen.
Look how happy the couple is right there. They're happy.
He's not disrespecting the game with his annex. He's making a mockery of the game.
There have been many players who have disrespected this
game. And I don't
game.
Like them.
And they've been some.
Chad Johnson,
well, hold on
I'm
now.
Very consistent.
I'm sure there are a whole lot of names that you like.
That you don't know.
That have disrespected
that
this game.
You don't even know
man.
About.
One of my favorite
I don't,
players.
Hey, I don't
get into that.
I don't like it either. But what I'm saying is Tony Dungy is always a guy that's extended that olive branch, that grace, and he wants to give people a second chance. Don't be angry at the Patriots because they have the culture to absorb guys like this and make it work.
Okay, but Tony Dungy is making my point. He's probably the same deal as me. Like, hey, man, as long as you respect the game, I'm all for second, third, fourth, fifth chances. Right. And I really am.
I respect the part about the kids. I am a high school
coach. Yeah, you're a high school coach.
I do respect the point about setting an example. But everything that happens, and Tony Dungy knows this, everything that happens is always and can be used as a teaching tool. Mm-hmm. Everything can. You can use that as a teaching tool. Why?
I hope
on this side, on this side, it's possible.
I hope he's a disaster.
But see, it's personal now. That
it really,
made
he's
this
disrespecting. And again, he's made it harder for me. I like Brady, Kraft,
what
and Belichick.
What if he plays really well?
I want him to get embarrassed.
What if he goes out there and
plays
really
well? I want him to get embarrassed in this situation.
What if he plays really well?
Well, this is the thing.
What if he learns the error of his ways and becomes a model citizen?
How about that?
I'm talking about it. It ain't happening. I hope it does, but it ain't happening. All right, before we go, I'm going to take some more pot shots at AB here. I'd like to shout out Falcons receiver Julio Jones and his agent, Jimmy Sexton. We spent much of the last week discussing the antics of Antonio Brown and his agent, Drew Rosenhaus. The guys who burned the Raiders, burned up $30 million in guarantees, and burned down the remaining pieces of Brown's reputation. Our AB obsession is a sign of the times. Batman bores us. We're now making movies about the Joker. Julio Jones and Jimmy Sexton are Batman and Robin. They just showed every player in the NFL how to play the game on and off the field. You want guaranteed contracts like basketball and baseball players? Conduct yourself like Julio Jones. At the same time AB was filming himself, pretending to be overjoyed by his Raiders release, the Atlanta Falcons were handing Jones $64 million for signing his name on a piece of paper. Yeah, the Falcons gave Jones a $66 million contract extension with $64 million due at signing. Jones is that reliable as a human being. He's earned that much trust from his employer. He shows up every Sunday, puts in 3 hours of work, and then disappears back into his bat cave. Antonio Brown is every bit as talented and productive as Jones, but he's not a reliable human being, and he's represented by the agent who specializes in representing unreliable receivers such as Chad Johnson and Terrell Owens. Drew Rosenhaus is the driver of the clown car. He spent the weekend feeding his media sock puppets information that rationalized the fact he's representing yet another receiver who won't reach his full economic potential because he can't behave as an adult. Rosenhaus created the myth that he and Brown orchestrated Brown's landing in New England by telling the media that Brown consulted with social media experts on how to force his release from Oakland. So the two kid videographers taping and promoting AB's buffoonery are social media experts? Or are they two kids exploiting AB's social media addiction for their own benefit? When it comes to social media, AB is the heroin addict Bubbles from the TV show The Wire. The videographers are the drug kingpins Avon Barksdale and Stringer Bell, and Rosenhaus is the slimy lawyer Maurice Levy. Julio Jones, he's Nancy Reagan. He just said no. Julio has 16 posts on Instagram and hasn't posted there in 32 weeks. His Twitter account is set to private. Julio is all in on football, and Jimmy Sexton made sure the Falcons are all in on Julio. Julio played the game the right way. AB is getting played. More Speak for Yourself after this. Let's move to the Broncos. We had a disappointing opener last night, losing 24-16 to a Raiders team that appeared to be in disarray coming into the game. John Elway's latest hope at the quarterback position, Joe Flacco, had an uninspired performance. And his new head coach, defensive guru Vic Fangio, coached the Broncos to their first game without a sack since week 16 of 2017. I'm going to hop, skip, and jump over you, LeVar,
okay,
and ask Denver's finest, Mark Schlereth, should John Elway's days be numbered in Denver?
Yeah. It's not a try-hard league. It's a do-good league.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things you have to look at, now, you've earned the right to continue to try to fix this. You've got a new head coach, another new head coach. But, yeah, this is about production. And I will point to the drafts, not the last two drafts, because I think the last two drafts are looking pretty good at this point, the 2018 to 2019 draft. But you look at the drafts between 2013 and 2017. That's five drafts, the Broncos. That's, let's say, an average of eight players per draft. You're talking about 40 potential players on your roster. Those drafts right now constitute six players on their roster with three starters and zero Pro Bowls. You know what that is? That's not good enough. And you're in charge of that department. So you have to be better. Now, like I said, I think the last couple of drafts have been much better. but you have let your team become depleted because you haven't used the free service that is college football to bolster your roster appropriately. You got confused. You know what you thought? I have to become more athletic. So you stopwatch draft. You made sure that you got the fastest. Like athletes, I always say this, football is easy for football players. It's really hard for athletes. And you drafted a bunch of athletes for 5 years in a row. And you know what those guys are doing? Not working for you. Mm. Mm. And so that's the reality of this. Do I think it's like next year or what? No, I think he's got time to right the ship because you went down the wrong path. But are your days numbered? Everybody's days are numbered in this league if you don't produce.
The show must go on. And the reality of it is it is a production business, and that production starts from top to bottom. The only one immune to that are owners. I mean, there are only ones that don't get fired. So if you think about it, only four teams in the NFL currently have had a longer playoff drought than this Denver Broncos team. And then to see the way that they came out and started the season last night, being probably the punchline to every AB joke connected to the Oakland Raiders, or soon to be Las Vegas Raiders, you would have to sit there and you'd have to say, with everything that has taken place, all the things that you introduced informationally speaking, from the head coaches, four head coaches since 2011, you have not been able to find a franchise quarterback since Peyton Manning, which he was in the twilight of his career. I just think that it's very difficult to continue to justify. His legacy is solidified, but being a leader of building a winning franchise when winning matters to that franchise, you have to say his days are definitely numbered.
Well, I think they need to flirt with the playoffs this year, and they got to make the playoffs next year, or he's got to be done. John Elway is my favorite football player of all time. He's struggling here as a general manager. I look at Vic Fangio as an overcorrection from the last head coach. You hired a young head coach last time because you thought you could put puppet strings on him and that was going to work. Now you hire one of the most experienced coaches, an older guy, and he has to work. Or you have to say, dude, you didn't make a wise decision. You just didn't want what you had last time, and an experienced guy, so you got a very experienced assistant coach. The pressure is on John Elway, and deservedly so. You say the drafts the last 2 years have been good. Drew Locke, are people, is he promising? I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, we won't know about 2019 for a while.
Yep.
But they've got a starter out of Dalton Risner who looks like a really good player at the left guard position. So they found themselves a starter in the second round there with Dalton. Noah Fant, it remains to be seen whether he can blossom into a really legitimate matchup tight end. So I don't know about the 2019. On surface, on paper, it looks okay. But if the games were played on paper, I spent less time on operating table, right? They're just not played there. You got to develop into a player. The 2018 draft with Bradley Chubb and they've got a starting middle linebacker and Josie Jewell. They got some players in that draft, to be sure. The quarterback issue is a problem. What you've drafted, the quarterback issue, that is a problem.
My thing about the quarterback, I want to stay there with the odd to me decision to go the Joe Flacco route. There's always been questions about Flacco as a leader, particularly as an emotional leader. He doesn't add any kind of emotional spark to your team. And then you hire Vic Fangio as the head coach. Mm. I don't think you're looking for a lot of energy from that guy either. Where is the juice coming from? Maybe it's supposed to be Von Miller?
Well, yeah, but here's the interesting thing, because Von Miller isn't necessarily, he's everybody's buddy. Like what happened to you, in my estimation, I live in Denver, so I'm a little closer to the situation. This happens to people and organizations. You have really prominent leaders, guys that everybody looks up to, guys they know they can rely on, in Peyton Manning and DeMarcus Ware. Mm. And you know what ends up happening to you? Nobody develops any leadership skills because they always defer to those two guys. Mm. Hey, when things get rough, Peyton will take care of it. DeMarcus will take care of it. And you go through that and you just rely on guys to do it and nobody else really steps up. And then those two guys leave at the same time.
No exit plan.
and everybody's like, well, what am I supposed to do? I'm not in charge. That guy was in charge. And it just hasn't happened. It just hasn't. They haven't developed those guys.
What happened to the Redskins when they were counting on you, LeVar, to step up?
Well, that's interesting that you would say that, because using them as an amazing example of what could happen, I was under a guy by the name of Vinny Serrato, and you'd have to ask the question, after putting together the types of teams that Vinny Serrato was able to put together, his time was running out. His days were numbered. When you bring in Deion Sanders off of the free agency block, you bring in Bruce Smith, you bring in Mark Carrier, you have Irving Fryer and Michael Westbrook on your team, Albert Cano, you bring in Jeff George to be the backup to Brad Johnson. Mm. When you start, you have Stephen Davis and Skip Hicks in the backfield. You bring in a guy by the name of Adrian Morrell, who happened to be a very fine running back as well, and Eric Metcalf. Shouts out to Metcalf, right? You have Larry Sinners at your fullback. You have a number one draft pick at your left tackle's position. You have a number one draft pick on your right tackle. His time is numbered. His time is over. You got to win. You got to win.
Through Vinny Serrato's whole career.
Hey, college football fans. Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Drew Brees.
You know.
Well, who are you?
What you mean who I am? God damn it, I'm Jimmy Hercules. I'm going to make sure we ain't got none of this mess that we had with the Rams and the Saints last year. We're going to take care of that this year.
Look, LeVar said a lot of stupid stuff. Take it easy on him. Thank you. When you give him this big dummy of the day.
Oh, this was real easy. Big dummy of the day go to the person that sat up here and just gave Tony Gonzalez $1,000 worth of liquor, but on my birthday, I couldn't get a half pint of apple crime.
Shame.
I don't know what's going on with that.
Crying shame.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's talk Drew
Brees. You saw how that Costa knocked him out.
You led an amazing drive for a game-winning field goal last night with just 37 seconds left. Brees will now turn his attention to the Rams, who beat the Saints in the AFC Championship game last year after that controversial non-PI call. LeVar,
yes.
Show some discipline here. Tell me quickly, do you think Brees and the Saints get revenge this week?
Yes. They were better than them in that game last year. They'll be better than them in this game. And in this game, they will have real motivation to win that game, unlike the whole AB stuff.
I don't think they win. Uncle Jimmy, you got any thoughts on whether Drew Brees and the Saints will get some revenge? You got any thoughts on Drew Brees?
I do. I like Drew Brees. Drew Brees reminds me a lot of myself.
How does he remind you of you?
Well, both of us come into the game undersized, underrated, and underdated. You know? And it's not until you see our complete body of work on video then you get a newfound respect for the work that we're putting in.
You have a body of work on video.
Oh, yeah. It's all out there. Go through the French quarters. You'll know all about my receipts.
Oh, man.
Trust me. See, man, let me tell you something. Drew Brees is down there in the motherland.
The motherland.
Big winning.
The motherland of what?
The motherland of big winning.
Oh, big winning.
Big women. Okay. Listen to me, LeVarrington.
Yes. I'm sorry, sir. I'm so sorry.
Look, he's down there in the motherland of big women.
Yeah.
It's what Uncle Jimmy choose to call the land of thick and spicy. As a matter of fact, that's where I acquired my first taste of the big woman and the high cholesterol. It was in New Orleans. Huh. To tell the truth, that was the first time that I'd had a Cajun woman bury my drawers in the backyard. I'm going to tell you something, LeVarrington. It's more powerful than a tossed salad from Red Lobster.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
See, I'm going to tell you something. If Drew Brees didn't have some self-restraint and a good insurance package, hey, man, he can't be down there messing with them that spicy food and them big women's.
He's a survivor.
But let me tell you this. On some for real, Drew Brees kind of remind me of you a little bit too, nephew.
Oh, boy. How's that?
Y'all got a little bit more in common than what you might know. You know, if it wasn't for Drew Brees and his self-restraint, okay? Yeah. You know, Drew Brees would have spent the last 10 years eating etouffee, beignets and spending his time soaking in jacuzzis full of gravy. And ended up 5'8", 235, just like you, sitting up there on a panel telling ex-NFL players how much they really don't know about football. Mm. Then you could be standing over here asking the question of the day and selling T-shirts just to pay for your new wedding like Darnell.
That's true.
Look here, man, I love me some Drew Brees.
Yep.
He represents the common man, the working class. The man can appreciate a big woman in a big offensive line. So having said all of that, he don't stand a chance in hell of catching Peyton Manning.
Wow. That was a surprising ending. I thought you were on Drew Brees' side. I do think he gets I don't think he gets revenge against the Rams. All right, here's my approval rating for Drew Brees. No, he goes up 2 points here. One in job performance, one in all-time greatness. Stays the same in character and authenticity. 93, GOAT status. LeVar?
Yeah, 21 in job. I think that, Drew has done an amazing job. Obviously.
Don't choke here, LeVar.
I'm really not. I'm so nervous because I've never done this before. All right, so it's ATD.
LeVar got him at a 94, point higher than me. 23 all-time greatness, perfect in character and authenticity.
I love his character and authenticity. All right.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.